Dino Zoccolo is the head of investor solutions at Westbrook Asset, Alternative Asset Management. We haven't had a chat, two of us, for about 18 months. So we're going to catch up with him today on what's going on in the alternative investment fields, particularly as lots of people are getting terribly nervous. You can't expect NVIDIA to keep going up 100% every few months, as it has been doing. And maybe some of the money is being taken off the table and put into very strong yielding investments. And that's what Dino and his colleagues at Westbrook specialize in. You know, I've been thinking about it, and I'll tell you what we did at the Business Model Portfolio, Dino. We bought into NVIDIA, which I think many people in all over the world have done. It has gone ridiculously high. I think it's gone up like 300% since we bought in. So what we did was that we then sold out enough to repay our capital investment with some profit, and we're just letting the rest of it ride. I'm sure that's the kind of strategy that many investors would be doing today when they have a look at the returns that they've been enjoying from big tech stocks, and presumably looking for safe places with high yields. And that's kind of the area where you guys specialize.
Yeah. Hi, Alec, and hello to everyone who's watching this conversation today. Certainly something that I'm very interested to talk to you about. You know, we're not wealth managers. So just to caveat what I'm going to say, we don't spend most of our day at Westbrook advising clients where to allocate their capital. We're more focused on talking to them about the products that we offer. But what we do see often, Alec, is exactly what you just explained. For years gone by, it used to be NASPERS where this problem arose. And now you're finding stocks like NVIDIA where a client invests, the stock does really well. But before the client knows it, they suddenly have become unintentionally significantly overweight specific either asset classes within their portfolio or specific equities. And I think what you've done in NVIDIA is a great example of what a lot of our clients are doing, which is that, you know, any investment portfolio, Alec, should have an element of a model around it, which is what percentage do you want to put into equities? What percentage do you want to put into bonds and fixed income type investments? And then within them, I suppose there's a sub-allocation of which, for example, private debt fits within one's bond portfolio. But you need to be very careful that you don't unwittingly become overexposed in your portfolio to something like equities. And what you're actually doing by doing that is you're materially upping the risk curve, which is something that we're trying to help clients with.
Yeah, it's very easy when things are going up to get excited about it. But when you do stop and reassess, investing is about having alternatives or balance. Otherwise, you can lose all of those gains that you had in an instant, and it happens every time the same. But let's just go into the private debt market, because when we spoke 18 months ago, it was December 2022, at that time, equities weren't really having a good run. Interest rates were high. Private debt was a place where people could kind of get their heads around it. Instead of getting returns from the bank that were modest, you could go into the private debt market where you guys play and you get significantly higher returns and actually not much higher risk. Maybe to start with, unpack what it is that you guys do in private debt and how it's developed over the last 18 months.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, to put it into context, Alec, private debt today is one of the world's fastest growing alternative asset classes. In terms of assets under management globally, it's got about $2 trillion in assets under management. The asset class has doubled in size sort of almost on average every 4 years over the last few years. And the expectations from the big providers is that it will continue to do that going forward. And I suppose the question that a lot of people have asked is what is private debt and why has it been so popular, to exactly the point that you've made. So to start right at the beginning, private debt is actually really, really simple. In summary, a private debt transaction is where anyone other than a bank makes a loan. It's really that simple. It started in 2008, post-GFC, global financial crisis, when Basel came in and a whole host of regulatory red tape was put in on the banks in order to extend new credit. And what that did is it made them slow, but it also made them want to focus on really big loans. So, for example, in the UK, where our flagship Yield Plus private debt fund operates, the banks don't really like to loan or extend credit for less than £20 million. And if they do, you know, they take quite long. And so post-GFC, you had this emergence, I suppose, of a whole different sector, which was focused on providing capital to businesses, properties, whatever it might be, in areas where the banks don't want to be there, because you can get great credit in loans of less than £20 million, but for whatever reason, they simply can't operate in that sector. And so I suppose, why has it been popular recently, Alec? Well, interest rates have been high has been the first key area of sort of debate, which is that when interest rates are high, equities tend to underperform. And at the same time, when interest rates are high, you get paid really well for private debt. And to give you an idea, in our UK private credit fund, Yield Plus, if I was to go back 5 years, even 3 years, we were sort of returning about 5% per annum to clients in sterling, but then cash rates were close to zero. Now you're earning between 9 and 9.5% in sterling, just as a consequence of the change in interest rates, without having to take materially much risk. And so I suppose if a client is looking for a place to invest where they are getting a really good unit of return per unit of risk that they're taking in this environment, I think it's probably fair to say that nobody knows what the future holds in terms of where the market moves from here, then private debt's been a pretty interesting place to be.
Have you seen a big increase in demand for your funds? And maybe we can also unpack how they work, because you would think the sensible investor today is saying, got to take something off the table from the big tech stocks, as we mentioned earlier with the NVIDIAs. And I'm glad you brought up the suggestion of NASPERS, because South Africans can kind of get that. They bought their NASPERSs early. Suddenly they were 20, 25% of the portfolio. But are you seeing this happening naturally?
Yes. I think the answer is yes. So if you look at Westbrook, we're ticking along at probably about £20 million per quarter that we're raising at the moment from what I'd call South African connected capital. So our investor base generally is a person that's somehow linked to South Africa. You might live overseas now. You might be fortunate enough to have retired and live somewhere close to the ocean. But generally, our investor base can reference us and due diligence us somehow through South Africa. And that base of capital is currently investing, call it £20 million a quarter. If I was to go back a year or two, that was probably more in the tens. And a year or two before that, and it was more in the fives. So I suppose that's the natural evolution of the growth of our business, but sort of concurrently with that, I'd say a definite increase in the uptick of demand from clients. So what I thought was interesting, Alec, is we recently surveyed our investor base. So we've got two or three types of investors. We've got a high net worth individual. We've got about 100 wealth management businesses around the country who allocate their clients to us, and we've got some institutions. But I surveyed my wealth manager base a couple months ago before a presentation that I gave. And I asked them sort of what percentage of you currently allocate to private credit. And you know, you must bear in mind that the answers were probably a bit skewed because I was asking a base who already know of us. So they were likely already allocators. But 70% of them indicated that they allocated to private debt. I asked the other 30%, why, if you don't allocate to private debt, why don't you? And what I thought was really interesting there was that the overwhelming answer was lack of understanding. And so that for me illustrates where we are in South Africa at the moment, which is that if you look at places like North America and Europe, average family office allocations to alternatives as a whole last year sat in the mid 40%. This year are expected to go over 50%, which means that on average, a high net worth, ultra high net worth family office in America or the European market are allocating half of their portfolio to alternatives on average. In South Africa, I'd be shocked if we were above 10% in some instances. I think a lot of South Africans, aside from their home, have almost nothing in alternatives. And so, yes, I've seen a significant trend in the uptick locally, but I think we've got a long way to go still.
It's a very good point that you make about alternatives. Now, you were the chairman of what used to be the 12J operation. And if you go back and look at 12J, I think there are a lot of people kicking themselves that they didn't take greater advantage of that. Now, then we've got this 12B Section A, which is coming to an end at the end of February, again, a lot of people are going to be kicking themselves. I had dinner with a guy on Friday night who said, no, he can't go with that. It's too good to be true. Well, of course it's too good to be true because you're getting massive tax incentives. But the fact that he hadn't unpacked it and hadn't been able to find out more about it yet meant that he was ignorant of it and that he just looked the other way. Perhaps that's what's happening in the private debt market. When you unpack it and explain it to us, then we see, the banks aren't operating there. They're good businesses in that field. As long as you have a diversified portfolio, you will be able to run a very good business there without all the overheads that the banks have. So the investor is going to get a good return.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an interesting anecdote, Alec. There are businesses in the UK that we have lent to in our private credit fund that also have listed bonds issued. Now, by definition, generally, a bond is an unsecured claim against a business. So you stand last in line over the secured creditors or after the secured creditors. But what I find interesting is that there have been a number of instances in the UK, Alec, where we have lent to those businesses with tangible asset security, which means that we stand in front of the listed bondholders in the queue when it comes to an event of default or liquidation. And we have lent at a higher rate than what the listed bonds are trading at in those instances. So, I mean, the message that I'd love to get across today is that alternatives, I think they're probably better described as private market assets in many instances. 12B, 12J, let's put those in a different bucket because those are tax incentives. They come with different risks. They are what I would refer to as once-off things that asset managers do for clients on an opportunistic basis. The real core of what is the multi-trillion dollar industry globally, where the likes of Blackstone are multi-trillion dollar asset managers, are the same things that you're used to getting access to as an investor, just accessed in a different way. So now the debate becomes, well, are we not getting a higher return because there's an illiquidity premium? So in English, what that means is maybe the bonds should trade at a lower yield because you can buy in and out of them any day at any moment, whereas in a private credit investment, you're locked in. And I think that's a good conversation to have. But the other reason that alternatives and specifically things like private credit have become so popular is because globally, there's been a huge trend, Alec, of the listed market shrinking. So if you look at the JSE over the last 30 years, the number of listed counters on the JSE have halved. And that trend in the US over a slightly shorter time period has been the same. The amount of listed companies in the US has halved. So if you're an investor and you're now looking to get true diversification in your portfolio, you don't really have a choice but to start to look at private market assets because that's actually where the largest addressable investment universe sits. It's just a little bit different to what clients are used to accessing.
Mm. All about teaching yourself or being educated on it. So the yields, and we see your ads all over BizNews, are over 9% in pounds. Now, again, going back to my conversation on Friday evening, my new friend would probably have said, no, man, that's too good to be true. How can you be sitting in South Africa and get 9% in UK pounds? It sounds too high. Unpack that for us.
Well, I think the starting point is that interest rates are different now to where they used to be. So the cash rate in the UK is now 5.25%, where if you went back a few years, it was 0.25%. So your starting point is higher. That's the first thing. Then what we do, Alec, is it's actually really simple. What we do in Westbrook Yield Plus is we make loans in the UK market, generally against properties. That's about 70% of the fund that we sort of focus on, where we lend to a property sponsor or a business that somewhere operates in property. And we play in a niche in the market. It just so happens that that niche happens to be a multi-billion pound niche. And when I say that, what are we doing differently to the banks? So there's probably three things that we focus on. The first is we do smaller loans. So as I mentioned earlier, if you're looking for a loan of less than 20 million pounds, the banks don't want to do it. But I see there to be this arbitrage between what's meaningful in pounds and what's meaningful in rands, because 10 million pounds is 250 million rand. So in the UK, 10 million pounds is literally a high net worth individual would make that loan. Whereas in South Africa, it's a sizable amount. So the first thing we do is we make smaller loans. The second thing we do is we're happy to extend credit for shorter periods of time. So in Yield Plus, we'll talk about it now, we don't have a lock-in period when you invest. There's simply a 6 or 12-month notice period. So in order to ensure that we've got the money from the fund to give our clients their money back when they need it, we've got to sit on a hamster wheel and we've got to make sure that we've got loans that are constantly being written and that are coming back to us in the portfolio on a periodic basis. So how do we do that? We write short-dated loans. So we'll write anything from 12 to 24 to 36-month loans. And then the last thing that we like to do is we deal with complexity just a little bit better. You know, I think most of us at Westbrook are either from Investec or RMB or a similar bank. We understand credit well. We understand how to deal with complexity really well. And what we're doing is we're taking sort of a high-quality investment banking style approach to a market segment in the UK where you're not getting that. And we're providing a borrower with an option which is more expensive, and we're unashamedly more expensive, but where the borrower doesn't mind because for whatever reason, they see us as a point-in-time lender. And their idea is that within 12 to 24 months, they're going to refinance us out with a big bank who's going to give them a five-year loan at a cheap rate. But during those 12 or 24 months, they will use the time to work out what the best deal is for them going forward. And so I think the summary is we're not doing things that the banks don't want to do. It's just that for whatever reason, they can't. And we're exploiting a little bit of an arbitrage between what's meaningful in rands and what's meaningful in pounds. And in so doing, we're getting a spread above cash for clients of about 4 to 5% at the moment. We're very fortunate that we've had a six-year track record of never having had a down month in the fund, touch wood. And the wider Westbrook business, after having invested hundreds of millions of pounds of capital, has had a historic loss ratio of less than 0.5%. So far...
So typically, if I wanted to invest in the Yield Plus fund, how much do I have to put up and how long do I have to stay in for, and what are the returns going to be like when interest rates fall? Because that's kind of the concern I suppose people would have today.
Yeah, great question, Alex. So the first point is, one thing we pride ourselves at doing at Westbrook, Alec, is we structure things really well for a South African investor to access for tax and other reasons. So when you invest in Yield Plus, you actually buy a share in a company that is regulated and domiciled in Jersey. So what that means is when you receive the return from the fund, you're either going to pay dividends tax on a foreign dividend, which as a South African, and just to be clear, we don't give tax advice, but generally as a South African, the receipt of a foreign dividend attracts 20% withholding tax as opposed to 45% income tax. Or if you're in a roll-up class, there's no tax event until you exit. So you buy a share in a company in Jersey. One of the implications of that is that there are certain rules. And the most important rule is that in order to access that company offshore, you need to invest a minimum amount of £100,000. You can come in for less, but if you want to come in for less, you need to get hold of your wealth advisor. Generally, they operate pooled investment structures and they can put you in one of their pooled structures for a lower amount. When you invest in the fund, one of the big changes we've made to Yield Plus is you used to be locked in for either 18 or 36 months. Now, because the fund has reached £150 million in assets under management, it's got a £25 million revolving credit facility from RMB Bank, and it's really well diversified. We've been able to drop the lock-in periods, Alex. So when you invest, you can give 6 months notice or 12 months notice, depending on which share class you select, immediately. And you can give that at the end of June or December each year. So basically, you can think of this as somewhere between a 6 to 12 month investment. I think lastly, to answer your final question around interest rates, we had historically, if you went back a few years, we had about 90% of our loans floating rate in nature because we were in this sort of gradual increasing interest rate environment. What we've done now is we've moved about half of the portfolio to be fixed rate in nature. And so what that provides an investor with, Alec, is if interest rates do start to go down in the future, I think what you get is you get a nice underpin in the returns in the sense that they won't go down correspondingly at the same cadence as what you'll maybe find elsewhere. And so we always sort of, as a manager, trying to do this, which is trying to find the best asymmetry between risk and return, and also to, you know, I suppose, keep abreast of what's going on in markets to ensure that we give our investors adequate return and risk exposure for what we're seeing on the ground.
And do you have tranches? Because presumably you raise the money and then have to lend it out. And a little bit like what's happening with the 12B now, the guys get the money in, then they've got to find the solar farms or whatever to invest in. And if there's a delay period, how does it work on your side?
What we've learned, Alec, is you've got to have the pipeline. It's almost irresponsible to raise capital without the deals, because the deals may or may not come. And the problem is, if you raise capital without the deals, there's a perverse incentive, because now your asset manager is put under pressure to spend the money and they might not do good deals. So we do it a bit differently. We raise money in the fund every quarter, so you can invest based on a calendar year, so March, June, September, or December. And the way we do it is we work out what our pipeline is, and then we work out if we have any redemptions in the fund. Then we work out how many loans are coming back to us during a specific quarter. And then the delta between that calculation that I've just explained to you is how much money we raise. And we will strictly cap the capital raise at that number. I think the one thing that is different, Alec, between South Africa and the UK is that you don't have to do as many deals to move the needle materially in terms of size in the UK like you do in SA. So, you know, we sort of tick along at somewhere between 2 and 4 transactions a quarter. And that at the moment is more than sufficient for us to raise somewhere in the range of between 15 and 20 million pounds each quarter. And that's sort of where we're at in the fund at the moment, which is that we're raising capital now for the end of June. We're looking to raise about 20 million pounds, as I mentioned earlier, for this quarter. And we've probably got another, as things stand at the moment, probably another 5 odd million pounds of capacity available. And so if anyone is watching this interview today, if they'd like to ask more questions or if they'd like to invest, they're welcome to get hold of myself or my team. You know, we're happy to help them, to guide them, to go on this journey of education that I spoke about earlier with them.
Dino Zoccolo is with Westbrook. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.